Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Our work series continues this hour with a show about women and burnout. Canadian researchers published a large study in late May that found that women are more susceptible to workplace burnout than men. Why? Well, one of the key reasons is the power imbalance in many workplaces. When University of Kansas researchers studied burnout among women, they found gender expectations added to the professional burnout that women were experiencing. More on the research in a moment and what this means for women of color. But this is a show not just about the problem, also about ways to avoid burnout and solve it. And I hope you'll join in. For our women listeners today, have you had a bout with professional and perhaps personal burnout? How did you know you were burned out? What helped invigorate you? And if women managers are listening this morning, or I guess managers of both genders are listening this morning, are you someone who notices, who recognizes burnout in the workplace? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Sharon Akinsanya is with us. She's the president and CEO of the Ray McKenzie Group and founder of the People of Color Career Fair. In the studio, really good to have you back, Sharon. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Carrie.
And Christina Maslach is with us. She's a professor of psychology at the University of California, Berkeley, and she's with us today from San Francisco. And Christina, welcome to you. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Sharon.
It's great.
I'm happy you could do this, Christina. Sharon, you're a woman with a lot of responsibility, a lot of obligations, and a big career.
Yes.
Would you recognize burnout if you were edging towards it, do you think, or do you just power on?
I think that I would just power on, but you got to power on, you know, being a woman and then a woman of color. You know when you're getting tired, but you just got to keep it moving, particularly in my case, as, you know, single parent, you know, aging parents, you know, you just got to keep it moving.
Okay, you're talking about one of the things that women told researchers, which is how what's happening in their home and their personal life is contributing to what's happening at the professional life. Talk to me. I mean, you're talking about being a sandwich kind
yes.
of generation here, right?
Well, absolutely. Not only am I the CEO, I run my own company.
Right.
You know, that I'm a single parent. I have a daughter in college that depends on me. You know, I have a staff that depends on me. I have a mom who's 78 who needs my help. My dad died. You know, I have a brother who needs some help because he has some health issues. You know, it is me. Okay, and then, this is everything. And so, and then I have a community that counts on me too to make sure that we're doing the right thing when it comes to inclusion and diversity and making sure things are equitable. So, but I'm up for it, Carrie.
I'm glad you had time to talk today because that's a lot of responsibility.
Absolutely.
Christina, that was one of the things that I picked out of this University of Kansas research, which was tying together these gender expectations and the role that women are thought to play in the home with what's happening at work and a lack of feeling, you know, full agency at work as well. How does this mix with the research that you've looked at?
Well, I think that what we have been able to identify over the years is that there are a number of key factors in people's lives that can increase the risk of burnout or conversely, might be things that sort of sustain greater engagement with work. And what we've discovered so far is at least six areas in which the fit between the person and the workplace are particularly critical. Okay. And one of those certainly has to do with autonomy and control in the sense that you have some say, some discretion about how best to do your job. Other ones are the workload. This is what everybody thinks of first. I have too much to do and can't get it done, don't have the resources. But we're finding that actually control and some of the others can be more important for burnout. So there's also just recognition and reward. Do you get positive things for having done a good job, doing well or not? Another one is the workplace community, all the people that you cross paths with, you work together with, that you supervise or, you know, your boss, et cetera. And are those relationships working well so that you feel supported and you feel you can work things out if there's disagreements? But we're also finding that issues of fairness in terms of who gets what opportunities or is discriminated against turn out to be a very powerful mismatch for some people for burnout. And finally, the meaning of the work, the values. What am I doing? Am I making a contribution? Am I proud of what it is that I'm accomplishing? And so the fit in all of those areas, each one of them can help either sustain people and make them do better and, you know, carry on, it was said earlier, and power through, or actually puts them at risk for burnout.
You've given me a lot to follow up on here. I just want to ask you, Christina, about the autonomy piece of this.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that came out in that Montreal study that I was looking at, that women tend to be in positions in workplaces where they don't, the power of decision making doesn't reside with them. How does that fit into how quickly or how women start to experience burnout? Why is there a connection there?
The connection is actually, let me just say that it can happen for men and women. So it's, but women may be more likely to be in jobs where this becomes an issue. So I say that only because there's a tendency to say if it's a woman's problem, there's something about being female.
Yeah.
And actually, it's something about the situation and the power differential that she's facing. So what we're seeing with autonomy and control is that this is one of the most important sort of psychological needs that we all have to be able to, you know, use our brain, make decisions about everything in life, our home, our family, work, et cetera. And if we're in a situation where we can't do that, where we are blocked, where we are forced into situations of doing things we don't believe in or think are the wrong decision or cannot actually exercise some sense of you know, control over what it is that I'm doing in my work life, this can cause huge problems with – it's highly stressful. It causes all kinds of problems in terms of people trying to cope with it. And so it leads to some – or can lead not only just to a sense of burning out, you know, on the job, but can lead later on to other problems like depression,
Sharon,
anxiety.
You are agreeing with this.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I mean, burnout, you know, is why inclusion is so important. So if you are serious about workforce diversity and inclusion and you're moving women of color specifically up through in the corporate ladder and making sure they have a seat at the table, mm-hmm. that gets to what Christina talked about with regard to autonomy. And then, you know, recognition, you know, work, being able to make decisions over what it is that you need to get done. That is why inclusion is everything. To be able to make sure that women are have a seat at the table. And in my case, in the work that I do, for sure, women of color, when diversity and inclusion is so important.
Christina also mentioned fairness.
Yes.
Sharon, and you were nodding during that.
This
idea that your contribution is acknowledged and valued, right? And that there is a sense of a fair playing field in a corporate setting, in a company setting?
No question. I mean, I think that this piece called diversity is easy, but access to opportunity, you know, is that being shared equally across the organization? I mean, research will tell you, and I think Deloitte did a recent study, that when we look at the promotions that are happening inside of our corporations, you know, the white employee is getting promoted at record rates as compared to their counterparts of color. And that's a problem. So we can get diversity in the workforce, but how do you have access to that opportunity to get that promotion and to get and then therefore have an opportunity to be autonomous, therefore have an opportunity to be recognized and make sure that others are recognized?
I would say
and
that statistics back up what you're saying.
Sure.
When you look at who is moving up into leadership roles, into the CEO to executive roles,
mm-hmm.
Still, for as much interest and discussion there is around this, it white men seem to still be running many of the companies and leading in executive positions.
Absolutely. And that's why it's so important for our CEOs to take a stand and to begin to lead out loud and lead on making the change, because they are our rock stars inside of these corporations. We need to hear from them. We need them to make the decision to move more women and more women of color up and through the ranks. That's so critical in order for us to make a change, because that's how we get to equity. They are responsible for making the decisions as to how we're going to have access to those opportunities and asking the questions of the CHROs. What access to opportunities do we have for everybody? Is it being shared equally across this organization that I am responsible for? Let's get with the program.
This is part of our work series that we've been doing through the summer, and it's a show particularly about women and burnout, because the studies show that women experience burnout at a greater rate than men do. How do you recognize burnout? What contributes to burnout? We've been talking about that at the beginning of the show. Sharon Akinsanya with us, president and CEO of the Ray McKenzie Group, and living on the edge of burnout, I think, given what she was saying. Christine Maslach with us, a professor of psychology at the University of California, Berkeley. I want to hear from you this morning, particularly as a woman listener. Have you had a bout with professional and maybe personal burnout? How do they intertwine? How did you know you were burned out? And here's the phone number for that. I'm hearing a lot of stories here on Twitter that are great. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. What helped to reinvigorate you if you've been through this? What'd you do? Did you make a big life change? How'd you handle it? On Twitter, at CarrieMPR, Renee says, yes, once as a professional traveling domestically and internationally almost every week, I'm now a therapist, and I need to be very mindful of how I balance taking care of me, my marriage, my young child, my clients. Like at 10:15 p.m. last night when I was making today's lunches. To the phones to Tina in Minneapolis. Hi, Tina. How does this relate to you?
Hi, yes, I was in the IT industry for about 20 years, and in 2014, I just decided to take my six-figure salary and said, see you later, and I started my own company a couple months later, and something completely, totally different. So I think it was reinvigorating in terms of like trying something totally new, but it was super scary, too, and as a woman of color, it was something that, you know, I just didn't feel like I was making a contribution in the organization, and that was being recognized. So I said, forget it. And I just left.
So, Tina, I'm curious. You sound kind of young, and you sound young to have made a big decision like this. Can I ask how old you were when you decided to leave and start the company?
I'm actually in my mid-40s now.
Okay.
So I was actually going through that midlife crisis moment as a 40-year-old person saying, hey, I think it's not making a difference here, so I think it's time for me to start my own thing.
Really glad you called, because I was reading research about millennials. Yeah, Sharon, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, she talked about, you know, she wanting to make a difference. You know, more and more these days, and again, I'm back to that Deloitte study. They did this study on millennials and diversity and these other things. And, you know, it's about the values. You know, they are saying, What do you stand for, Mr. or Mrs. Business Leader and Corporation? Are you really trying to make societal change or only shareholder value? Now, we get it. Shareholder value. But because you are our leaders, we look to you even more so, according to the study, than politicians, to say, where are you trying to make a difference? And so that's what Tina was talking about. What I need to make a difference. I need to be able to feel like I'm waking up in the morning with my why and a purpose. So that's why we're calling on our leaders to really be clear about it. Where do you stand as a corporation? And our CEOs, where do you stand personally? What are your values?
Christina, you were going to add.
Yes, I was going to say that last area that I had mentioned was all about values and meaning and, you know, the kind of passion people have for their work. And what we're finding is that in many cases, that can come down to be the number one thing, that you can put up with a lot of demands, heavy workload, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, if you really believe in what you're doing and you're really feeling good and, you know, proud to tell people what you've accomplished. And to work in a job that doesn't ever give you that opportunity of feeling like, yeah, I've made a little mark, I've helped out, I've, you know, contributed in some way through the work I'm doing, People will leave and say, I want to find something else. I want to find something better than what I'm doing. And the sad thing is, in a sense, like, you know, with Tina, her example, she went out and started something different. The company that she left lost her talent, lost her ability to
bring that. Probably doesn't even know what
they
lost. Right.
Bring in, yeah. And so it this matters a lot to people.
You know, Christine, I think what Sharon said is really important. I don't want to miss this about the articulation of the value of the mission from the top. Do you think enough business leaders who are, I don't know, used to a pretty traditional infrastructure understand how urgent that is and how necessary it is for employees to hear that?
I wish I could give you an answer to that by saying that I've had a survey to so many business leaders and I know what they think. So it's hard for me to comment directly on that. But what I do worry about is leaders who are looking at other things like metrics, who are looking at how we stand up to this, this metric, that metric, et cetera, and not, in a sense, tying it into why is that an important thing to be measured on, to be assessing, and what is it really that we're trying to accomplish here, and are we assessing that, not only the good stuff, but are we showing that we're not doing bad things like having people out on absenteeism and health problems and all this kind of thing because of the work that they're doing. So I do think it connects in with the values. Too often, quite honestly, I think I walk into places and there are these wonderful things up on the walls about, oh, this is what we stand for. But when I talk to people, they're seeing a big gap between what's on the wall and what I actually do. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, how do I know that what I'm doing, whatever it is really actually a part of this bigger, better kind of thing.
Sharon looked pretty knowing when you were talking about the thing, the posters on the wall that supposedly define the values.
You know, and they're on the website too. And so, you know, to Christina's point, and you know, there may not be a ton of surveys on this, but what we do know is that our leaders, they're leaders for a reason. Mm-hmm. And so if they are able to articulate those values and make it really, really clear what they stand for and what the expectation is of their middle managers and those that report to them to make sure everybody feels included and heard and that there's access to opportunity and that opportunity is shared equitably, that is what we need to hear. Leaders are leaders for a reason.
Sure.
And our CEOs need to lead out loud.
How about the idea that you are also shaping the mission of the organization, that it isn't just a we've declared what it is from the top down?
Absolutely. You're modeling behavior. You know, so we're following what our leaders are doing. You know, we're following, you know, what our CEOs, the examples that they're setting. It's granting permission for others to do the work in the way that they've set the example for. And you can't do that being invisible as a CEO.
Mary says, Carrie, you're hitting on everything that's going on in my life right now. My goal today is to not cry or go off on people at work. I'm exhausted and frustrated. I work in a predominantly female environment. I'm a manager. I'm a woman of color. My job isn't the right fit. Mary does sound like she's on the precipice of burnout there. Doesn't I don't know, Sharon, Christina, some advice about how to take stock and what to do? I don't know. Let's Sharon, you're having a beer with Mary. What would you, and she's telling you this, what would you say?
Well, Mary, you know, I can empathize with Mary. You know, she needs to really examine her why.
Okay. Why am I here?
Her why.
Why am I at this
Her why. Why does she want to get up every morning and what difference does she want to make?
Okay.
And if she is at a company that matches that goal, and if not, then Mary needs to make some changes about where she can add value by really taking a look at where she needs to be. Maybe she is in the wrong spot. So she needs to make sure that she's putting herself at the top of the to-do list, identifying those corporations who are serious about wanting to have her, you know, add value to the work that they're doing.
More of a values match.
It's a value
really
match. It's a value match. What's your why? What's going to make you keep getting up in the morning and look for that fit?
Call here from Tia in Minneapolis. Hi, Tia. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi.
Thanks. Thanks for taking my call. I am a self-employed jewelry artist, and I, for the last 10 years, I've been doing exactly what I love. I've been essentially building a dream, and about 4 years ago, I totally burnt out. I was working out like all the women do. I was striving for all of these things. I have two kids, and my body stopped. Like, it wouldn't get me through a yoga class without weeping. I was becoming, you know, I couldn't get a good night's sleep. All of, you know, my body told me that I had to stop. Even though I was in a situation where the value, you know, you were just talking about value,
right.
I was doing what I wanted to be doing. And so it's taken me several years to kind of deprogram myself of being an overachiever, because I think leaders are encouraged to step up and, you know, and do everything to the best of their, you know, get the 10, win it.
Yeah.
And so I had to actively teach myself how to relax. I started coloring. I started doing puzzles. And ultimately, I found my way back into a creative art practice. And I still make jewelry. I still have my own business. And, you know, it has a certain amount of success, mm-hmm. which is great. But I have found that I have to balance even that dream with a different type of regenerative activity.
Boy, I'm so glad you called, Tia, because I didn't want to leave listeners with the suggestion that, well, you find the dream job and then everything's great and you don't have to worry about that again. I mean, you're also saying your personal life needed a rebalancing, too. So did that mean having your partner do more, you know, work in the home or more of the childcare? How'd that work?
Well, you know, honestly, for a period of time, we were both self-employed, so we were both at home, and so we had this very kind of very few boundaries where we just kind of fit what needed to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really has been more about me facing what makes me go to such extremes with everything. And I think that women are faced with images that are unrealistic. We're trying to make our bodies look a certain way. We're trying to maintain ourselves in every aspect of our lives in a way that it's almost impossible, really, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I have been painting a watercolor painting every day for 465 days. And it took a lot to allow myself an hour of time to do something that wasn't related to making money, that wasn't related to my children's needs or the household needs or whatever. And I just had to prioritize it. I have reprioritized my life, and my house is messier. You know, there are other things that have had to, you know, be let up.
Yeah. You're also reminding me, Tia, and let me go to Christina, the psychologist here, that I think women also tend to have this idea of what perfectionism looks like, and we worry maybe about that more than men do. Is there something to that, Christina, or is this just talk among my friends over wine?
I think the perfectionism issue is both male and female. And, you know, we see it in a lot of ways. There may be some things that differ in that. But what Tia is talking about, anybody actually can go there and get caught up in that. And the thing that concerns me in some sense is that what we don't pay as much attention to is what are the things that we are dealing with that are causing some of the strains and whatever. There are other people. There are other practices and policies. There are other schedules and stuff. And they were not designed in a way that actually supports people doing the kind of work they're doing. So if we only focus on inward on ourselves, we may miss part of what it is we could do something about. And that often means getting together with other people who are responding in the same way and having the same kinds of issues. It's not just all about me.
Right.
So I guess I would add that I think the kind of things that you know, Tia was saying about what she does or has done, you know, to balance out her life are terrific.
I know.
You know, and that's the kind of things that, you know, we do talk to people about. The only thing that I would add, because I see this a lot, is that we tend, people in general, tend to focus too much on what's going on with the individual person. And therefore, if you can't handle it, there must be something wrong with you, you know, and self-blame or blaming of others. And how do we fix this person, send them into therapy, do this kind of thing, and saying, but what's the fire all around that is causing these people to experience this? Can we do something about that as well?
Call here that I think goes to this, to Jan in Duluth. Hi, Jan. How does this work in your house and your work?
Well, hi. I'm 64. Mm-hmm. I've worked full-time since I got married in my 20s, as has my husband. I had a job I was very happy with and fulfilled with. My issue was the imbalance of home and work. And I always thought it was like my generation where I was doing more of the housework and more of the child care, and things would get better as time came on. The only thing we would really fight about at home were chores and putting the kids to bed, or, you know, child care. And after one of these fights, my husband says, well, if you're not happy, then hire a maid. And I thought, I'm going to hire a maid. And the funny part was that we were lower middle class. It's not that we could really afford that, but I thought for my sanity and my balance and for the marriage, really, I hired a cleaning service. And that made an incredible difference on my outlook.
Wow.
It did at work, and it made a difference at home, and we were all happier. And from that, I started to loosen up a little bit more. It was okay to buy potato salad at the deli rather than make homemade potato salad.
See, this is a standard that women think. Yeah, I mean.
But this is the sad part. And I also, the other thing, so that's what I would do. I outsourced what I could. The other thing is, instead of having fancy vacations or making all this effort to pack up and make these elaborate plans, we tend to just to stay home more at vacations and do smaller things just to kind of catch a breath. But then I have four daughters, and I thought things would get better with their generation. And this past 4th of July, my one daughter, who is married and works full-time and has a child, called to say she wasn't coming to the cottage for 4th of July because she was just too tired and she just needed to take a break.
Oh,
and when I did go to her house, I would still see the same thing, that she would come home from work and she was doing more of the laundry and more of the grocery shopping and the planning for, you know, for daycare and that sort of thing.
So the household.
My question,
your question, go ahead.
My question is whether things really have changed with this next generation. I thought my generation was the working
Sharon
group
says,
that would get past that.
Jan, so Sharon says no way. Okay. Sharon, no.
No,
don't think so?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that has changed. I think there's, you know, there's a nurturing aspect, right, to what women feel like they want to do. They like things nice. They like things, you know, like to create memories for families. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just really understanding how to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was raising my child, who's 22 now, I divorced her father when she was 3. I asked for surrogate fathers to step in to help support
you mean
her.
Among friends?
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
Among friends, my brother and others, because I knew that I can't be her dad. I'm not a man. So I needed to make sure that she had that peace in her life. Today, I have 5 coaches. I don't just do this by myself. I have a personal development coach. I got a business coach, a finance coach. I got all kinds of coaches, you know, to help make sure that I am staying on track. And then as we think about what Christina was talking about with regard to making sure that you're connecting with those who have sort of like issues.
Yeah.
I think it's important inside the workplace to make sure that you are part of your employee resource network because they have different resource networks that are sanctioned by the corporation inside of your workplace. And so that is built of and made up of those employees that have similar interests, similar issues, similar challenges. And so you can then, it's not just about you, maybe you can chip in, right, and add some value to their life, and then they can add some value to yours. So I want to remind everybody that, you know, if you don't have an employee resource network group inside of your corporations, you should form them. And if you're not a member of them, you should consider, you know, take a look at those.
Sharon Smith-Akinsanya with us, president, CEO of the Ray McKenzie Group, founder of the People of Color Career Fair, and Christina Maslach with us, a professor of psychology from the University of California, Berkeley. It's the latest in our work series, and we're talking about women and burnout this morning and hearing from a number of you who sound like you're edging up to it or you really took some interesting tactics to avoid it and solve it. Asking you this morning about whether you've had a bout with professional and maybe some personal burnout and how they connect. How did you know you were burned out? Are there some things that you've done to reinvigorate yourself that I think that would be valuable to share with everybody else who's who's out there listening this morning? 800-242-2828, no matter where you are in the region, 651-227-6000. And on Twitter, at Carrie NPR. Back in just a minute to the latest news now from Stephen John. Hi, Stephen.
Morning, Carrie. President Trump has suggested that NATO allies commit to spending 4% of their GDP on defense. That's up from the current goal of 2% by 2024. The White House confirms Trump raised the idea at a closed-door meeting with fellow NATO leaders today in Brussels. Trump has been pressing member countries to spend more on defense, accusing them of freeloading off the U.S. NATO estimates that 15 members are just over half will meet that 2% benchmark based on current trends. A leader of a U.S. contingent that was part of the operation to rescue 12 Thai boys and their soccer coach who were trapped inside a cave says the boys endured dives in zero visibility lasting up to a half hour. Derek Anderson called it a once-in-a-lifetime rescue. The rescue specialist with the U.S. Air Force told the Associated Press in an interview today that the boys and their coach were incredibly resilient. A union leader is identifying the Wisconsin firefighter killed in a gas explosion as a man who also owned a tavern that caught fire in the blast. The president of the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin today identified Corey Barr as the firefighter who was killed. He was the owner of the Barr House, one of the five buildings damaged after a contractor punctured a natural gas line in downtown Sun Prairie last evening. A crowdfunding campaign has raised more than $13,000 for a North Dakota couple who lost their week-old baby when a tornado hit the oil patch town of Watford City. The sheriff of McKenzie County says the boy died from injuries he suffered Tuesday morning when the twister hit an RV park and the family's trailer was flipped. More than two dozen other people were injured by the tornado. Heat advisory up for much of central and southern Minnesota. A good chance of showers and thunderstorms today, especially in the north. This is NPR News.
Programming is supported by Lake and Irving, a culinary-focused restaurant in Uptown, offering prefix menus during Restaurant Week, July 15th through 20th. New items include tomato gazpacho and bone-in Beeler's Farms pork chops. Details at lakeandirving.com.
On the next NPR News Presents, a look at why young Americans choose to live in rural parts of the country. Journalist James Fallows moderates a panel of young professionals from the Aspen Ideas Festival today at noon and 9 p.m. on Minnesota Public Radio News.
Tomorrow morning, I'll be in Minneapolis at the One Water Summit talking with mayors of some large cities and small towns about how they're facing up to the challenges of clean water, infrastructure that's decaying, pollutants in water. Be a good conversation, and you'll hear it at 11 o'clock tomorrow as we launch our big project on the Mississippi River next week. So listen in tomorrow at 11 o'clock and then a series of national call-ins next week at noon. Back to the conversation now, right back to the phones to Ari in Minneapolis. Ari, am I pronouncing that? Ari? Okay. Hey, so glad you waited. Tell me how this resonates with you.
Yeah, hi, Carrie. I love the show.
Thank you.
So, yeah, interesting topic today, right up my alley as well. I've been in the construction industry for quite a time, 9-10 years in sales. Just recently negotiated a higher pay plan for myself.
Way to go.
A couple months ago. Yeah, it went really well and was really pumped about it. I work with all men, you know, in construction. So it was quite an ordeal. Then recently, just a little while ago, a few days ago, actually, one of my coworkers found out about it and mentioned it to the boss and kind of wasn't happy. And I thought, you know, my boss would probably stick to his guns, say, hey, you know, she fought for that. We gave it to her. But unfortunately, he took me back down to my previous pay plan. And I'm, you know, POC, you know, it's tough because, you know, it's like, what do you do? I'm still making
it. Wait. The boss caved in on and
yeah,
and took the pay raise back. Do I hear that right?
Oh, yep.
Whoa.
And, yeah.
Sharon. Oh. What?
That, I mean, I thought I heard it right, but then we both went, I think, what at the same time.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, are you going to stay?
That's the question. I mean, I'm still making good money because this is what we face, right, as women and women of color, still making good money, but it's substantial. You know, at the end of the year, when I crunch all the numbers, you know, it's huge. And It's a good question because I really like the company. I like the people I work with. But at the same time, you know, that it's tough to be in the situation.
I hope you're not doubting your own value because obviously the company believed that you deserved the higher pay. So
right.
What's happening here, Sharon?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not a human resources expert, but I'm sure it has had something to do with an HR thing or equitable or something that, you know, couldn't do one and not the other. I'm sure it's just something there.
If she gets this,
she
then
gets
the
this,
rest of
right.
us.
So, it you know, so I don't think it was an Ari slam. I think it was some sort of policy that just got messed up, but I think you are to find out, Ari. Just check in, you know, to find out what happened here, because I'm sure that was a disappointment. I mean, I'm not an HR expert, and I don't play one on TV. I'm a marketing expert on inclusion, but I just, you know, you want to find out what happened there.
So, Ari, you also said you're at a crossroads. Then, like, what to do about this? Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Part of me, I've been thinking for the last few years, I heard another guest talk about she started her own thing.
Right.
And I'm a person of color. I'm in construction. I have a huge base of people that support me because I'm a woman in construction. Mm-hmm. And they, so it's something I've thought about. And it kind of inspires me to maybe, you know, really consider that and
right.
see what steps would be necessary to get it going.
Right. But you do know you have options, though.
Oh yeah,
okay.
I don't feel trapped, but it just this happened, and it's like, oh, how do I come back with this? How do I respond to this when, you know, this guy essentially he found out what I was making, and I'm on a better pay plan than he is,
mm-hmm.
and he thinks it's not fair, and everyone should be paid the same. Equal.
The other thing that strikes me here is this is the kind of thing that contributes to burnout. I mean, this is what we were talking about at the beginning with Christina. Please feel free to get in on this.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, I was going to say, I mean, there's obviously issues of fairness here.
Right.
And the challenge is really trying to get beyond the kind of what tends to be finger pointing and name calling about it. Oh, it's not fair, you know, kind of thing. And really figure out what is fair or not, you know, and is there ambiguity in terms of how we do things or, you know, other ways to make clear what the principle is, what the policy is,
right.
you know, why this was right, you know, as opposed to not. What makes it even more complicated, I think, is that in many cases, personnel actions are often kept confidential and then maybe it leaks out or not or somebody shares it or not. And people don't really know the full story about why someone got a raise or, you know, why I didn't get this or why I should have gotten that. And so how to make more clear what it is we do and why we do it the way we do it and what are the opportunities and so forth. I mean, I don't know what has happened in Ari's case, but, you know, if this was pulled back, there should have been some really clear apology for not having handled the whole thing well. There should be some clear statement about what this is. And also, you know, some options say, well, how is it going to actually move forward the way it should have in some way?
I don't know. I think the decision says something that would be important to me about the company.
No,
I think I've learned something if I was in Ari's about this company.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it that you like it, and maybe they've been good to you in other ways, but you've learned something valuable.
No question.
You don't want to forget that. Kevin says here on Twitter, employees need to know how their work is measurable, quantity and quality, and meaningful. How does my work contribute to the success of the company? Something you were saying, Sharon.
Right.
Look for companies with humble leadership. I wanted to also ask you both about, I was reading an interview with a young woman named Emily Aries, who had a big job with the Obama administration. She was young. She was in her early 20s. She found herself in serious burnout, and dealing with it required a number of different things, including therapy. And she said she also had to come to terms with the idea that she had limits. And she had to reconcile that with her perception of her as an ambitious, you know, kick blank kind of woman. And she said this in the interview. She asks herself, can I be this fierce woman with so much ambition while still taking care of myself, like embracing sustainability? Like, how sustainable is this ambition? And she said she found she had no choice. Christina, how does that there's real self-awareness there, but there's also kind of a sense of my image of myself and my ambition was this, and my life told me something about this, and now I have to reconfigure that.
That can happen a lot. And again, here's my concern, that it goes inward always, you know, to what is it about me? And, I think sometimes there are what I would call unrealistic expectations. And then if we can't meet those, we think there's something wrong with us, as opposed to the expectations of what you can do and accomplish and the hours you should be working and what you should be sacrificing in order to do all of this. That may be a little bit more unrealistic in terms of how human beings best function and thrive and grow and develop. With burnout, usually what we're seeing is there's a huge imbalance or misfit or mismatch, however you want to call it, where things are not working together. And what we're seeing often in the workplace is they're upping the demands. They're upping the load. They're not hiring more people. They're asking everybody to do more, to work harder, work longer. I now see in the workplace a real culture of fear in many places. You don't dare say no if they ask you to do something extra. Come in on the weekend, work overtime, do this, do that. And at some level, you have to say this is not a healthy kind of environment for people to really do their best and be able to move forward and accomplish great dreams and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, Sharon, I was thinking we tend to be, I think, a professional culture that says, we really admire the people that push themselves to the limit. You know, the people that say, I only sleep 5 or 6 hours a night because that's what it takes to get this job done, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, leaders will talk about this.
Well, sure, you know, but that's just, you know, to Christina's point, it's just not realistic. I mean, you know, and this is where leaders have to lead. And we as team members and employees have to choose. And we need to be asking these questions in our interviews, in our performance reviews.
What's the kind of question
and what
to really...
What is your expectation? You know, do you expect for me to work 24/7? You know, that... when I worked for Prince, that was the expectation. But I knew that going in. Okay? Because
also knew there was a certain time that you could do this in your life.
Absolutely. I committed to 2 years.
Yeah.
And that was it, you know. I mean, it ended up to be 3, but I knew that going in. I asked the question, he answered, yes, right? So as we do the interviews, you know, we need to really manage the expectation. And this is where leaders have to come in, HR executives, CEOs, hiring managers. It costs money to replace employees.
Yeah.
You can't kill them, and you have to figure out a way to reduce stress. And burnout is just going to cost the company money. And so this is why we have to ask, what is the culture? What is the expectation? Do you care about me as a human being so that I can be functional, to be able to be productive, to add value to your bottom line?
Call from Pat in Champlin. Hey, Pat, thanks so much for waiting. I'm really glad you did. What are you thinking about?
Well, here's my problem with the whole discussion. It seems to be focused on professional people.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? There are millions of women out there that work on factory lines, behind a counter, there's no HR out there. There's no, oh, this is what our company's values are. They're out there just working a job, and companies look at them as being easily or disposable employees.
Kind of interchangeable,
and,
right.
Yeah, and I think a vast number of women are in these jobs. So when I listen to these conversations, I kind of think they're a little disingenuous and out of touch with what the majority of women deal with every day.
Fair enough, because as you're describing this, I'm thinking, so if you work a shift in a factory, how do you, I mean, what access and opportunity do you really have to the leaders of that company to say, I'm on the edge of burnout, or the demands are too much, or what does this company stand for? Sharon, fair enough.
It is fair enough, but that's why I'm saying leaders, no matter where they are, you know, in a Fortune 500 corporation or in a factory or in Starbucks, cannot afford to have the turnover, whether, you know, people are waiting tables or whatever the situation is. They must care about us as human beings, no matter where we're working. So my comments apply across the board.
Christina, do you have something to
Yeah, I would add to that, because I think it's a good point. I don't think burnout is something that is only, you know, something experienced by certain kinds of people in certain kinds of jobs. And what we're seeing in many places in terms of what people are doing can be happening, you know, on the assembly lines and packing things in Amazon and Netflix, as well as, you know, anywhere else on, higher up. But I think the other point I want to sort of just make here is that another thing, and I think there was an earlier caller who sort of mentioned this, and that is employees feeling that they're not being heard, that they don't have enough of a voice, that there's a way to figure out what a lot of us are thinking about. What we're finding with burnout, for example, is that there are solutions, let's put it this way, mini solutions of how to make the workplace a little bit better. How can we improve this so we really enjoy working here? How can we get rid of the, you know, the inefficiencies, the nagging problems that just drive everybody buggy? And the people who are doing that work often have much better ideas than anybody else. And how to really work with them and empower them in a way that they can help improve the workplace rather than just waiting for somebody else to do it. And so this the power of numbers, the power of support of other people that you're working with, being able to take control of some of the things that don't have to go higher up, that can be done, you know, within our particular unit or our particular location. We're just finding that the relationships with other people and how you can use those as part of making the kind of job you're doing a better experience for you and them as well is a really important thing.
Among your coworkers. You know, Sharon, I was thinking about what you were saying about how expensive it is for companies to replace people that are burning out.
Absolutely.
And I thought you've got this career fair coming up in October. I was thinking, how do you, on the, besides acting, asking on the way in, what are going to be the demands? How much am I? How else do you get a sense of the workplace culture and how other employees who have been there for a while perceive what is required of them?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of ways. One, you know, LinkedIn. How are their employees showing up on LinkedIn? Who do you know that works there? You know, could you ask a couple of questions? You know, at the career fair, you know, kind of really get a gauge, spend a few minutes with people asking proper questions, and you can sort of get a sense. But I think that when you see, and if you're in the community and you see those members of that corporation or organization out where you are, you know that they probably have some sense of connection to the community in which you live. And so you just have to do your due diligence. And I mean, ask a lot of questions. And one of the things that I strongly recommend is, who are you connected to on LinkedIn that knows somebody who may know somebody who works there or who have worked there, to get an answer to that question?
Okay. Well, I mean, we're in an economy where a lot of companies are now looking for work. They can't afford to lose these people, you're saying.
They absolutely can't afford it, which is why, you know, they come to, you know, partner with me at the POC Career Fair to make some of those connections, because we do have choices. We do have choices. And employers who have skills and degrees are in high demand.
By the way, that Person of Color Career Fair is October 10th
it's
at
Wednesday,
the Minneapolis
Yeah, Wednesday, October 10th
Center.
At the Minneapolis okay. Convention Center.
Let me see if I can squeeze Jenny in St. Paul in here. Hi, Jenny. Hey, Jenny, are you there? We might have lost her. Let me grab Cyrus in Minneapolis here. Hey, Cyrus, hi.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
This is more along the lines of from a coaching perspective.
Sure.
There's an individual I work with. She has a great deal of responsibility. She is the administrative assistant for our VP, but she is also taking on all the responsibility of a work location. From a perspective of, from a coaching side, I'm very much, you know, do less to do more. But how can others help individuals who feel like they're stuck? That's
Good.
What I'm really looking for. And I greatly appreciate any insight you can possibly provide.
Okay. Christina, can I go to you first? What do you do to help?
I guess the first thing I always think of is, and it sort of follows up on this other point, is reaching out to some other people, getting a different perspective, seeing if what you're doing or what you're assuming is on track, or maybe you're in a different kind of place. Finding other opportunities, finding ways of coming up with proposals about how about I don't do all of X, but can I delegate some of that and have someone else work with me on X, and then I can, you know, come up with Y. So that often people may be able to come up with alternative ideas about how they can handle the work and just, you know, ask if they can just try it out for a while, doing some cutback, but, you know, coming up with something that they think would be better.
I mean,
taking more control over that.
What I think I hear you both saying here is don't be ashamed to talk about it in the workplace and then maybe harness
some advocates, you know.
Right. The
advocates,
the ideas and solutions that the people that you're working with have.
Absolutely. Because, you know, there's someone on her team that would advocate for her along with her advocating for herself to make sure that, because she wants to be in a position to do the best work. And so does her boss. And so that just has to be bubbled up.
Christina, thanks much. Yeah. Good to have you here on the show.
Okay. You're welcome. Thank
Sharon,
you
always a pleasure
me.
To see you.
Always a pleasure
Good to
see
have you
too,
in the studio.
Karen. Absolutely.
Emily adds, I felt burnout at my last graphic design job when I would cry at my desk late at night when everyone else was at home and I was still at work scrambling to get my work done. I quit and I vowed to myself not to get to that place again. There is more to life than work. If you take anything away from this show and you feel like you're on the edge of burnout, take that. There is more to life than work.